Please welcome Bill Guyer.
All right. Well, I'm glad I got to be here for this topic because I only come about, I've been coming about 4 years, maybe only two or three times a year, kind of like bad flu only shows up a few times a year. So that's kind of how it is with me. I like the topic to really relate to me personally. And I've mentioned before sometimes about my career as a performer. Fortunately, I was never a musician, so I promise I won't sing. And I took a weird path, and music kind of was my salvation in a way. Now, I mentioned before that I used to be a juggler. It's hard to describe. I did juggling, comedy, feats of daredevilry. You know, I guess you could say I was probably a jackass before Johnny Knoxville was born. So you really have to dedicate yourself and have some OCD to be a good juggler. You have to get five objects, you have to practice every day from like 12 to 24 months to get to that point. So I really hit it hard. I realized, thinking about it, that my career was like 2.5 careers. None of them all that successful, but they were both fulfilling. Now, I really hit it hard at the beginning. I did everything. I took dance classes. I worked. Did everything, acting classes, the whole deal. And I really got my big break at Laguna Beach when I was with a dance company that was auditioning to work at the Sawdust Festival. And I figured I'll just do like a 10-minute warm-up just to get everybody at ease. And they hired me and not the dance company. And so I really got a lot of experience working there, hundreds and hundreds of shows. You know, I figure one year I probably gave 15 minute shows probably 150 times one summer. And I got some close brushes with break. You know, I thought maybe with my big chance I would be discovered. I'd be the next Albert Lucas. And I said that because none of you probably even know who he is. But at the time, he was the greatest juggler on earth. Now, I had some brushes. I had some people from L.A. or Pasadena. I'd go up and do some shows there. But I never really got panned out. And I think the thing that was the punctuation mark at the end of that phase was in the early 80s, I did a show for the end of summer pagan ritual at Myron's Ballroom in downtown L.A. And usually I was the weirdest person when I showed up. And I showed up with all these punk bands, and there's a couple of gallons of frozen blood in the sink. And it's like, oh, this is going to be exciting. But I realized that I didn't know if I really wanted to have the rest of my life spent with pierced people and buckets of blood. So I decided to get serious, got back and was working construction even harder, decided to help my parents out in Oceanside. So I was down there. I didn't have the same connections that I'd had before, didn't have performance connections. So I decided to attend community college with the intention that I was going to get serious and get away and just put this whole performance thing behind me. And one of the classes I enrolled in was a theater arts class. And I ended up getting the lead in a children's comedy musical theater. So I guess the dancing and all those lessons were finally paying off. And the other intention of going to school, advance my career, and meet a woman that I wouldn't meet in a bar, hopefully. And unfortunately, that's the only sad part of the story is that is where I met my ex-wife. And so anyway, I was piddling along, and it was a transition. So I went from phase one to like phase 1B. And that was, I was working really hard. Ended up getting married, having kids, so I didn't have time to play games. I would do children's shows, you know, through connections with my kids and that kind of thing. So people knew kind of what I did, but it wasn't as serious as I had done it before. And then it finally got to the point where when I was a single dad of two, I had no time to play. I had to work two jobs, and that was it. So I had to put away my childish games. So I was working as a manager in a restaurant, and I got to know one of the other guys there, and he told me about his friend Bob, who had just got 7 acres of land out in Corbett Canyon, and his other friend Grant was building a stage off of the back of his house. This is Bob, by the way. So one thing led to another. I went out and did my, he said, well, let's go to this party that he's having for his daughter's sweet 16. I said, well, you know, let me do my little act. And I did that. And then it just kind of morphed from that, that then he wanted to do more shows, and we got to know some local bands. Great, great band Glider back from the olden days. And so it went from, oh, let's have a little party on the weekend to, we had a burning tax man party. Every weekend before April 15th, we would, you know, it wasn't like Burning Man, but we'd burn a tax man in effigy, you know. First time, you get somebody in a suit, put him in a chair with a computer. First year, we, like, put a bunch of explosives in his head, and we got people that got styrofoam shrapnel, so we decided not to do that anymore. But it kept getting bigger and bigger. So we started off with just a few bands, and then everybody kind of wanted to do it. I never went to any of the Lord Buckley. You may have done. We had secret passes. Well, we got to the point where here's one of the flyers. We had, like, I don't know, 10 bands, and there wasn't enough for the 10 bands, so then we had to build another stage. So they built a stage in an oak tree, which is awesome because they didn't use any fasteners to the tree. And then it got so big we couldn't even do it on Easter or, you know, April weekend. So we started doing it in the summertime, too. And here's an example of the lineup we had. We had the tree stage. We had the main stage. And fortunately, I was always given the time right before the headliners. So I had been like a perpetual warm-up act. So I figured, yeah, why not? Why not? So I got involved with this. And it was great joy. It wasn't too long, though, before my friend in the band, I said, man, Ryan, I can do that song. They did mostly originals. They did one cover. And that was a great joy that music brought to me. One of probably my top 10, not 10, top 100 moments. I'm too damn old to have 10. That we sang at Mother's on the final time that they did it. And they only did one cover. They did Hey Joe. I said, Ryan, I want to sing that song with you. And he had a nice, sweet voice. I sound more like a runaway beer truck that's going off the road. So we did it as a duet. And it was a great moment because, I would get into it. And we had this little break in the middle of the song. And he said, hey, man, have you ever heard about anger management? You know, because that shows you the kind of way I sing. I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, you know, counting to 10. And I said, oh, because we're halfway through the song and we're in the middle of this conversation. But it was perfect. It was the most perfect moments. So he goes, well, did you ever try anything like that? Yeah, I went to a place and took some anger management classes and even had a anger management classes. He said, well, how'd that turn out? I said, not too good. He said, what happened? I said, I shot him. Anyway, and then we went right back into the song. So it was like a glorious moment. So it kept getting bigger and bigger. But the problem is, if you have a party somewhere, especially here, at 10 o'clock, turn the sound down. We're having big parties with, I think one year we had, 500 wristbands. And we kind of ran out. It got really out of control. But it was well-managed, well-controlled. But there were noise complaints, and you can't just have 300 people say, oh, we're just going to turn the sound down, everybody be quiet. So we had to come up with a solution. We thought and thought about it. And the sound man went out one day when we were doing the three-day shows, and he did decibel readings all around the canyon because it echoes. And what he found out was the people clapping and cheering and yelling in between songs spiked higher than the music did. So then we had to come with an idea. My friend Grant, who was the bass player for Glider at the time, we were trying to come up with some kind of way to get people used to the fact that you couldn't just act like an idiot. And so he's going, well, maybe you just have people snap their fingers. And I said, I said, well, yeah, you know, it reminds me of back when I was juggling, that a lot of times you'd have competing people, so you'd try and get everybody to cheer. It's like, oh, and everybody would come running to your show. But I used to like to do other things, like have everybody scream, this guy sucks, this guy, because I figured more people were going to run to see a disaster than to see something good. So I said, another thing I used to do is tell people to shh, don't get excited, shh. So that was the birth of Shush and Snap Productions. So that's Bob. My friend Jerry did the artwork. And we did it for several years. So music kind of had my phase two of my career. And unfortunately, physical problems have caused me to not have a phase three. But I was glad that I got that reboot through all the bands.